Chapter 15. None of us got much sleep that night, and Darwin had breakfast ready before the sun had made it over the horizon. I only knew that because I'd given up on sleep after a few restless hours in the sleeping bag and ventured back to the crack to take a peek outside. The skies had cleared overnight, and only a few stray clouds scudded by. There was a thin layer of frost on the ground and a cold sharpness to the air that lingered as the blue blackness of the night sky gave way to the first gray fingers of the morning.
"Darwin said the hash will be ready soon,"
Sorsha announced as she slipped up behind me. "Do I want to know what he used?" I asked.
"I didn't pay much attention, but it smells all right. Maybe a bit heavy on the onions."
We returned to the camp where Darwin was filling three metal bowls with his concoction. It did smell of onions, as well as wild garlic, fried potatoes, and beans. It was the same trail fare I'd eaten for years, and I wolfed it down without even tasting it. With the addition of Darwin's thick, sludgy coffee, I could have been anywhere along the eastern cattle trails. We rarely left the tunnel during the day, and when we did, we only ventured out by a few feet. We kept watch over the airport from a ledge along the hillside, but if the police department had spotted the tracks of the ATV, they hadn't followed them. Except for a few crows, everything remained quiet. "I'm surprised I haven't seen any police around the airport," I noted when Darwin joined me.
"They know I won't leave the area without Freya," Darwin remarked. "They're just waiting for me to make my next move."
"You still feel good about our plan?" I asked.
"As long as Sorsha can do her part, we'll be fine. We can be well away from here before those bastards from the Magisterium show up."
"I wish we'd bought those two horses the other day," I sighed. "It would have made this easier."
"The mounts in the police barn will be just as good," Darwin assured me. "And it will keep them off our tails for a bit longer."
"What if they don't like the ATV?" I asked.
"They'll get used to it," he shrugged.
Most of our discussions the rest of the day ran along the same lines. We rehashed the plans over and over without making any real changes. I handed the Glock I had created to Sorsha, since she had handled it before, then created the Colt revolver for myself and another Mossberg pump-action shotgun for Darwin at his request. I still had the Winchester rifle as well, and Darwin had his small arsenal on hand, and for the first time, I wondered if we had too many guns. But then I remembered the frustration of not having any guns while the mages attacked, and decided I would rather have too many weapons than too few. At sunset, the sky turned a brilliant orange, and the scent of burning wood drifted on the wind. We crept back to the airport, and after a quick check for snooping deputies, we darted into the giant barn and retrieved the ATV.
"We should have enough fuel in the tank to get us to the rendezvous point,"
Darwin stated as he checked one of the gauges.
"But I'll add some more once we arrive. Wouldn't do to run out of gas in the middle of a chase."
I let Sorsha have the seat to herself and sat down on our load of supplies. I grabbed a hold of the nearest bar as Darwin started the engine, and then we were on our way once again. We bounced across the concrete and back toward the old dirt road, and I was already regretting my decision to ride in the back. I'd already smacked my head against the frame once and nearly toppled over the side twice by the time Darwin had steered us onto the road, and this wasn't even the roughest part of the journey.
"Hang on!"
Darwin yelled as we swerved around a pothole. "I could walk," I called back, as I slid perilously close to the edge again. But no one responded, and the ATV moved onward. Eventually, we left the road, and Darwin steered it across a field of brambles and down a muddy slope. After that, we splashed across a small creek and then powered up a rocky hillside. It was probably a fun ride, if you had the luxury of being in a seat, but bouncing around on the boxes and bags while holding on for dear life was not endearing the ATV to me. I was the first one to stumble from the machine when it finally came to a halt, and it took me a few moments to find my footing again. I ran my fingers through my hair and wiped off what mud I could, then finally I looked around. Darwin had chosen a spot that was a short run from the police department, but still far enough away that no one would hear the motor over the sound of the bell. As Darwin had told us, tonight was the night Medrick offered his services at the old church, and the bell was rung to let the citizens know when Medrick was ready. Medrick, according to Darwin, was a stickler for promptness, and that meant the bell tolled at the same time on the same night of the week, week after week, year after year. The lights had started to come on, and I could hear the sounds of horses' hooves on the roads, the buzz of human conversation, and, over it all, the bell that rang from the rock church at the opposite end of the street from the police department. I could see a large crowd already moving toward the bell, and that included many of those who had stood outside the police department.
"Here," Darwin said as he handed me my Winchester. "Keep it out of sight until you need it."
The glow around the weapon was more obvious in the evening gloom, and it reminded me of a story my father used to tell of a hero who carried a glowing sword. I wondered for a moment what my father would think of me and my magic. Then I tucked the rifle beneath my long coat.
"Sorta strange that they glow,"
Darwin commented as he studied the Mossberg pump action I'd made for him.
"But at least I can tell the difference between the two."
"Are we ready?"
Sorsha asked as she joined us.
"Nearly,"
Darwin replied as he pulled a tin can from the back of the ATV.
"Let me just top her off first."
Darwin moved to the side of the ATV and unscrewed a cap. In the darkness, there was little to see under the cap other than a black hole, but Darwin tipped the can and I could hear a heavy, liquid slosh from the can into the ATV.
"Is that the oil you mentioned?"
Sorsha asked.
"Yep. As long as we can find some, we can keep this little beauty running. The good news is that people still like to fry their food, so that shouldn't be a problem unless we hit a long stretch without a town."
"If we stick to the old roads, we should be okay. Most of the towns I've ever seen are near the pre-magic roads, even if no one uses them anymore."
Well, doesn't surprise me,"
Darwin mused as he screwed the cap back on the ATV, sealed the can, and then placed it back under the tarp.
"It looks like quite a crowd at the meeting,"
Sorsha murmured as she watched people enter the church.
"Then let's get these explosives set while everyone's in with Medrick,"
Darwin declared, as he set the twin shotguns aside and pulled out one of his mystery boxes from the back of the ATV. "I'll take one of the shotguns for now," I offered as I picked up the glowing twin gun. Darwin nodded, then marched off with the box in one hand and the original pump-action shotgun in the other. He picked his way through the shrubs, then dropped onto a deer trail. Minutes later, we were on the other side of town without sight of the horse dealer. A lamp was still on near the corral, and a pair of men stood outside the lawyer's office engaged in a long conversation, but otherwise this section of town looked to be empty.
"Stay here,"
Darwin whispered, as he slipped through the shadows. I saw him for a moment near a crumbling wall, and then he dropped out of sight. I waited for him to pop back up again, but somehow he managed to circle back to us without either of us seeing him.
"Next spot,"
the ex-trooper whispered as he suddenly appeared behind us.
"Oh!"
Sorsha exclaimed in surprise. The two men outside the lawyer's office stopped talking for a moment and turned toward the sound. It felt like an hour dragged by, but it was only a few moments before one of the men shrugged, and the two men started to walk away, still in conversation.
"Don't surprise me like that,"
the Irish woman hissed.
"Come on,"
Darwin urged as he set off again. We went through the same exercise four more times as we circled the town. Our luck held, though, and the men outside the lawyer's office were the only ones who came close to spotting us. When Darwin had placed the last of his explosives, we snuck away to a spot just off Main Street where we could watch the police department.
"Ready for the fireworks?"
Darwin asked with a gleeful tone.
"Do you really think they'll work after 50 years?
Sorsha asked.
"I've taken good care of this C4 after I lifted it from Picatinny,"
Darwin replied.
"Some of the elastics have degraded, but the explosive is still good."
"Isn't there supposed to be a wire or something?" I asked.
"I'm not that old-fashioned,"
Darwin grunted.
"Remote detonation, courtesy of the mages, actually. I've been able to figure out how to turn some of their crystals into receivers of sorts."
"Well, let's see it then," I replied. Darwin nodded, then, with the flair of a showman, held up a rectangular metal box for our approval. There was a button in the center of it and a small metal wire sticking out of one of the short ends. A small mage crystal had been glued to the end of the wire, though it wasn't glowing at the moment. Darwin pressed the button and a heartbeat later the crystal winked on with a blue glow.
"Did it?"
Sorsha started to ask. The rest of her question was cut off as the ground beneath our feet seemed to rumble, and then a deafening roar erased all other sounds. Clouds of dust and dirt plumed up into the sky, blocking out the moon and stars for a moment before it all fell back to earth. I could hear screams by then, and people tumbled out from the buildings along Main Street to try to figure out what was going on. The front door to the police station opened, and three men spilled out. One had to be the chief of police, given all the gold braids on his shoulders, but the other two looked like regular deputies. They also didn't look terrified the way the townspeople did, and the chief slowly scanned the streets, even as dirt and debris started to fall on the town.
"And now for part two,"
Darwin murmured as he produced a second metal box. The ex-trooper waited until the chief had issued instructions that sent one deputy back inside and the other one toward the other old church, where a large crowd had gathered inside. When the chief turned to head back into the department, Darwin pressed the second button. The ground actually shook for a moment as the second round of explosives went off. The chief bolted from the building with two more deputies right behind him.
"That just leaves the guy in the desk,"
Darwin declared. We sprinted from our hiding spot and made it to the front door of the police department before it closed. Darwin was through the door first, though Sorsha and I were right behind him. The man on the desk had clearly recognized Darwin, and he'd already started to step from behind the desk with his hand on a crossbow when I raced through the door.
"Stay!"
Sorsha commanded in her hypnotic voice. I glanced behind the deputy for a moment as I wondered if there was a dog in here that I hadn't seen.
"Take us to the prisoner,"
Sorsha ordered. The deputy's legs wobbled, as if they couldn't decide which direction to move in.
"Take us to the prisoner,"
Sorsha ordered again, in a voice that had somehow gotten even deeper. The deputy, a red-headed man with very thin lips, slowly turned and walked toward the far end of the old church. We passed the chief's office, where a cup of steaming coffee still sat next to an open file, and an unlit file room, as well as an office reserved for investigations. The deputy stopped at the final door for a moment, then slowly opened it. Two brick steps led to the covered walkway, and at the other end stood a heavy oak door with an iron lock.
"Open the door to the jail,"
Sorsha instructed. The deputy stepped just inside the door to the old church and pulled a set of keys from a hook. He then moved slowly down the steps, along the passageway, and stopped in front of the door. He stared at the keys for a moment, then selected one from the ring which he slid into the keyhole. A moment later, the oak door opened soundlessly, and the four of us stepped into the jail. Darwin snatched the keys from the deputy and ran toward the back of the jail, while Sorsha kept the deputy locked in place. I moved to the back of the old church and pushed the door open enough so I could hear if anyone else returned before we had Freya out of the cell.
"He's got her!"
Sorsha called out a few moments later, just as I heard someone enter the front door of the police department. I let the back door swing shut and ran across the passageway to the newer building. "Someone's coming," I warned as I bolted into the jail.
"Find the right key,"
Darwin yelled out as he tossed me the key ring. Freya was holding on to the ex-trooper with all her strength, with her face buried against his shoulder. The mutant didn't make a sound, but I could see her shoulders shivering as she clung to her grandfather. I ran to the side door that Mary Wright had used and found the correct key on the second try. I threw the door open for Darwin and Freya and handed the second Mossberg to Darwin as he and his granddaughter ran by me.
"Our turn,"
I called to the Irishwoman.
"Go back to the front,"
she instructed the deputy.
"Tell them you are checking on the prisoner. Tell them you are worried that someone might try to break in. Tell them she's still in the cell."
"I've got to tell them that I came to check on the prisoner because I was worried that someone might try to break in. But she's still in her cell,"
the deputy replied, as he turned back toward the oak door. While the deputy stumbled back toward the offices, Sorsha and I dodged through the door and into the training yard. I spotted Darwin and Freya at the corner of the building, and then they slipped into the darkness and were gone from view. Then I tossed the keys into the night and followed Sorsha into the barn.
"I really wish we'd gotten that gray mare,"
Sorsha sighed as she took a look at the horses in the stalls. There were six horses altogether, all young and powerful, and not one looked happy to see us. Two even tried to bite us as we walked along the aisle. "These are the new recruits," I surmised. "Deputies that already have a horse trained for police duty probably ride it home so they can be ready to go at a moment's notice."
"Are any of these tamed?"
Sorsha asked. "Well, these two at the end," I called out. "They left them saddled in case of an emergency, just like Darwin said they would." Sorsha joined me and peered over the stalls at the last two horses.
"I guess we're taking these two then,"
she replied. The horses were both bays and both tall, and even though they were the calmest of the bunch, they still snorted at us and shook their heads. I'm just glad they keep horses ready all night long, I said as I opened the first stall. There's no way we could have all ridden on that ATV. I had the first bay out of his stall by then and handed the reins to Sorsha while I opened the door to the second stall. The second bay nearly bolted past me, and I had to lunge toward him just to grab the halter. I swung into the saddle as best I could with the rifle still in one hand, then held the reins for Sorsha's horse while she mounted. As we rode toward the open barn door, I opened the rest of the stall doors and shooed the horses out into the night. I doubted they would wander all that far, and by morning they would return in search of breakfast, but for tonight it would keep the deputies from giving chase. Our herd of 6 horses burst from the barn just as the jail door was thrown open. I spotted the chief in the doorway as we rode past, and I heard him yell for one of the deputies, but then we were out of the yard, and on Main Street, and on our way west again. We galloped past Lewistown Road and the old granary that Darwin had mapped for us and finally reined our horses in at the tottering sign for Bob's Big Burgers. It was as odd as Darwin had promised and featured a bigger-than-life statue of a very fat, smiling man in bright blue pants and a checked shirt holding a board with the name of the restaurant. The board had come loose from one of the hands, though, and it moved in the cold night air.
"They're not here yet,"
Sorsha noted, as the other 4 horses started to mill around. "I'm sure they'll be here soon," I replied as my horse started to tug at the bit. But it was a few more minutes before we heard the hum of the ATV. The horses had all looked up at the unfamiliar noise, and as the odd little vehicle came into view, the other 4 began an easy gallop back toward town. Our mounts tried to follow, but Sorsha and I managed to keep them under control.
"Easy as pie," Darwin declared as he pulled up next to us. "Next stop, Erie."
"How's Freya?"
Sorsha asked. The rabbit woman was curled up in her seat with her face hidden behind her knees and arms, though she did look up for a second when she heard Sorsha's voice.
"She'll be fine, just as soon as we're far away from here."
And that's when our easy escape became a lot more difficult. The sky suddenly lit up in a shower of red and orange, and the 2 bays reared up. It was all I could do to keep my seat, and I saw Sorsha struggle with her own mount. I heard Freya squeal, but Darwin dropped to the ground next to the ATV and grabbed both of the pump-action shotguns from the passenger area. When I had the horse under control again, I turned to look at the stretch of road we'd just ridden across. 4 mages walked solemnly toward us, and I realized there had to be a portal mage in the group, since there weren't any other horses nearby. I guessed that one of the lot was probably Medric, and the rest were probably the mages from the Magisterium that had been sent to question Freya. The fire mage in the group launched another attack, this one directed toward Darwin. The old-timer managed to roll away before the fireball lit up the space where he had been standing, but I saw flames lick along the side of the ATV and smelled the acrid scent of burnt tar from the pavement in the old parking lot. I saw Freya leap away then, and her mutant agility carried her toward the other side of the parking lot in a flash. I swung the Winchester to my shoulder as the fire mage started to create another fireball, but taking aim from the back of an anxious horse was a lot more difficult than taking a shot while standing on firm ground. I managed to get off around before the mage could launch the fireball, and somehow I hit him, but the mage only staggered and stared at the spot where his hand used to be. There was nothing but a bloody stump and a ragged end of bone left. The mage started to wail, though I wasn't sure if it was from the pain or the shock.
"Charles was right about taking off limbs," I muttered as I tried to steady the horse.
My ride had tried to unseat me again as soon as I fired the rifle, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw Sorsha struggle with her horse as well. Clearly, horses and guns were not the best mix.
"He has a gun as well!"
one of the other mages called out.
"Medric, you little shit!"
I heard Darwin call from somewhere just to my right. There were some overturned tables in that direction, and though I couldn't see him, I figured he must have taken shelter behind one.
"You've always been trouble!"
the man who had called out the warning about the gun declared. Medric was short with a narrow face and 2 enormous ears, and he peered down the tables with contempt written all over his features.
Like hell,"
Darwin yelled as he leapt up with the Mossberg I had created in his hands. I knew exactly what he meant to do, and as he opened fire with the pump action, I leapt off my horse and bolted to a spot behind the ATV, just as the boom of the shotgun exploded into the night. I crouched down as soon as I was in position, then peered over the edge of the seats. Medrick was sprawled across the ground, his arms flung wide and his head tilted back so that his eyes seemed focused on the road behind him. A hole almost big enough to stick a fist through had appeared in the middle of his chest, and blood still spurted from the wound. While the remaining mages tried to retreat from Medrick's body, I pointed the Winchester toward the fire mage again, felt the rifle kick back into my shoulder with authority, and saw the mage's face explode as the bullet found its mark. Blood sprayed out in a bright red ring that coated the remaining two mages, as well as the road around them. White bone and gray brain matter flashed in the dying firelight as the mage's body slumped to the ground.
"I've got the one on the right!"
Darwin yelled over the ringing in my ears. I didn't bother to respond as both Darwin and I took aim on the last two mages. The sound of the Winchester 70 and the Mossberg pump action firing at the same time was as loud as the explosives that Darwin had set off earlier. The noise rolled across the land, even as the last two mages fell to the road in a gory display of blood and tissue. Flecks of brain matter and lung tissue hung in the air for a moment, then dropped to the ground in a ring around the two bodies.
"Hex!"
Sorsha called out in warning.
"There are more on the way!"
I glanced over and saw that the blonde mage had grabbed the reins of my horse and seemed to have both animals under reasonable control. I also spotted Freya nearby with a glowing Glock in her hand.
"She knows how to use it,"
Sorsha offered when she saw my look. "Get the horses behind the building and see if you can keep them calm," I instructed. Sorsha nodded, and both she and Freya started to lead our mounts deeper into the shadows behind Big Bob's building. When they were safely out of sight, I ran across the lot and joined Darwin behind the table.
"How many?"
I asked as I joined him behind the table.
Looks like another five," Darwin hissed. "I can't believe they sent this many just to question Freya."
"I'd guess some of them are here for me," I sighed, as the mages stopped while they were still several hundred yards away.
"And I've already used three shots." "Looks like the bastards are learning," Darwin remarked as he glared at the four men and one woman who lingered in the road but refused to move closer. "I guess we'll have to go to them."
The two of us watched the mages for several moments, and the woman and the tallest of the men suddenly ran into the shadows on either side of the road.
"You want the woman or the man?" I asked.
"I got the woman," Darwin replied as he peered toward the right. "There's a drop-off over there I can use."
"You go first," I suggested.
The ex-trooper nodded, then peered over the top of the table. When no fireballs or lightning bolts zipped our way, Darwin stood up and sprinted toward the right, one Mossberg in his hands and the other strapped to his belt. I stood up at the same moment, the Winchester already nestled against my cheek and shoulder, and opened fire. Bolts of lightning streaked across the sky just as I fired, and I was knocked to the ground, flat on my back. All I could see was a bright light, and every hair on my body stood on end. I smelled smoke and hoped I wasn't on fire as well, though it didn't feel like anything was burning. I somehow rolled back behind the table, the Winchester still in my grasp, and did a quick assessment. Everything still moved, even if it did ache, and there were no flames leaping from anywhere, so that was good. My personal alarm was going off, though, a reminder that I only had one bullet left in the Winchester rifle. I peered around the edge of the table and saw that there were only two mages still standing in the road, and they had backed up even further and left their compatriot crumpled in the middle of the road. I heard one of the Mossberg shotguns boom at that moment, and the two mages in the road both looked in the direction of the sound. I used that moment to dart toward the left, where the other mage had disappeared, and threw myself between a pair of shrubs before the mages had a chance to throw another lightning bolt. I took a moment to catch my breath and then moved more quietly between the trees. I wasn't covering much distance, but that was fine. I just needed to catch the tall mage before he caught me, and I was willing to bet I had more experience prowling around in the night looking for things like wolves and giant rats than he did. The mage could move quietly, but he was trying to move quickly as well. It wasn't long before I heard the rustle of leaves and the crunch of a pebble. I froze and waited, and finally spotted the outline of a man moving just ahead of me. I took one deep, slow breath, then lifted the Winchester once again. The blue steel of the barrel looked like a line drawn in the night sky straight toward the mage, and as he eased into view, there was no doubt about the outcome. The crack of the rifle echoed through my body, and I felt the momentary kick of the gun as the bullet cleared the end of the barrel. The smoke was almost lovely in the moonlight before it was carried away by the nighttime breeze, but the bullet had found its mark by then, and the tall mage toppled over before he could even register what had happened. I inched closer after the gun disappeared and found the mage face down in a puddle of water. There was a large crater in the back of his head, and bits of gray tissue poked out of the wound. Blood bubbled out from the wound and oozed down the side of his head, where it swirled in a puddle of rainwater. Despite the small victory, I felt a moment of loss as well. I'd fired the last shot from the Winchester, and I wouldn't be able to recreate it for another 24 hours. After a moment's thought, I decided a rifle was still my best weapon, and I looked down to find the trusty Ruger 22 in my hands. I checked the safety, just as Darwin had instructed, though I knew the weapons never appeared with the safety on. I heard one of the Mossbergs then, a big, booming sound that rolled around inside my head for a moment. It was a reminder that we still had work to do, so I left the mage's corpse and started to work my way closer to the pair that had remained in the road. It was slow going with only the moonlight, but I found a spot that I estimated would put me parallel with their position. I inched toward the road as soundlessly as I could until I found a good blind behind a tree and an old concrete post. I peered around the edge of the tree, but only one mage still stood in the road. It was the Lightning Mage, a dark-skinned man with a shaved head and a ball of electricity dancing along his fingertips. His eyes roamed along the road and the bushes until he heard movement nearby. Before I could react, he tossed the lightning toward the spot, and a blinding flash lit the area brighter than the sun. I ducked behind the concrete post and waited for my eyes to clear, then turned to look at the road again. The mage had moved toward the site of his strike, where a puff of smoke lifted into the sky. As he moved, lightning started to form at his fingertips again, and he slowly raised his right hand as he prepared to launch another attack. I stepped quickly from my spot and had the Ruger 22 at my shoulder as soon as I was in line. I pulled the trigger as the mage started to turn around, and the crack of the rifle ricocheted off the crumbling concrete. For a moment, I locked gazes with the mage, and then the bullet pierced his chest and buried itself in his lungs. The mage wheezed for a heartbeat, and then blood bloomed along the front of his robe and spilled from his mouth. He went down slowly, as if the air was being pressed from his body, but he finally collapsed onto the road, his eyes still locked on me. I stepped cautiously toward the mage, then scanned the area for friend and foe alike. I heard something move in the bushes and raised the Ruger instantly, then lowered it when Darwin appeared with both shotguns.
"Where's the other one?" Darwin asked.
"I don't know," I replied. "He must have moved while I was circling around to this spot."
"The girls!"
Darwin warned as he started to run back toward Bob's. I was right behind him when I heard several quick pops from behind the building. It was definitely gunfire, though at a faster clip than I'd ever heard before.
"The Glock!"
Darwin explained quickly when he saw that I had stopped. We ran past the ATV and around the edge of the building. We found Freya and Sorsha with both horses, all apparently unharmed. Freya had the Glock in her hands, and she pointed it toward us as we jerked to a halt. When she saw it was us, she lowered the gun and then walked over to a red bundle.
"He tried to come up behind us,"
she stated as she nudged the mage with her boot.
"Sorsha was able to stop him long enough for me to shoot."
"And your parents didn't want me to teach you how to shoot,"
Darwin scoffed. I smiled at Sorsha, who had a death grip on both sets of reins. The horses still looked edgy, but they were standing still at least. I started to walk toward the Irish mage, but then I heard a familiar sound on the road.
"Horses!"
I called out.
"The chief must have gotten things organized, though it doesn't sound like they're racing to get here."
"They must have worked out that there were a lot of guns out here," I chuckled as I ran toward Sorsha and the horses.
"Like I said," Darwin added, "Parker's not dumb. He probably waited as long as he could before riding off after the mages."
Sorsha and I motioned quickly while Freya and Darwin darted back to the ATV. A few moments later, the engine growled to life and the ATV raced down the road.
"I guess we're following them,"
Sorsha laughed as she urged her horse forward.
"I guess so," I agreed as I rode after her.